Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello, and welcome back to the Newsbusters podcast, the show that dares ask the question, who in America thinks Joy Behar is an important and intelligent voice who everyone needs to hear spout about politics? It is a mystery. After the election, The View is still upset, even though they believe that Joe Biden has it in the bag. She, Joy Behar, was suggesting that if Trump had won, it would have been the end of this country. It would have been the end of democracy. And I am not exaggerating.
But I worry about the possible 4 years of this, and this is the end of democracy. It's the end of this country, 4 more years of this. I believe that, right. Especially when they own the Supreme Court, and if, God forbid, they take the Senate again, we're doomed. We're doomed.
Isn't it annoying the way that liberals always think that there's only a democracy when they win? They always seem to equate democracy with the Democrats being in power. Obviously, democracy isn't perfect enough because the Republicans gain seats in the House and retain the Senate. But 4 years ago, Joy Behar was completely panicking that the Democrats weren't in charge of anything after the election. She literally said, my boy Ben brought this up, she literally said the only checks and balances on the government are the ladies of The View. Just listen.
What scares me the most, I don't know what scares all the rest of you the most, is that not since George W. Bush has there been a White House, a Senate, and a House of Representatives all from the same party. Mm-hmm. And then the FBI has stuck its nasty little nose in the middle of this, plus the Supreme Court, who knows where that's going to go. So the only checks and balances we have are us, The View. That's it.
What an insult to the very many liberal journalists out there who've spent many months denouncing Trump as the eternal fascist, the eternal threat to democracy. If President Biden is sworn in, he will remain an eternal threat to democracy, the fascist menace over there behind the wall. He built the wall, and now he's the menace behind it. It is just odd, in a sense, that they're just so unhappy still. And Whoopi Goldberg came on after Joy did this whole thing about the end of democracy, and she basically lectured 70 million plus Trump voters and said to them,
when you know who was elected 4 years ago, you know, Hillary Clinton didn't say, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't feel right, stop the count. She didn't say, this isn't right, I'm not going for it. She didn't say any of that. So all of you, suck it up. Suck it up like we sucked it up. And if you are not sure that you're comfortable with Joe Biden, do what we did. Find things and then take it to the law. And if the law says it's something to look at, look at it. But from now on, suck it up. Grow the pear for him that he can't grow for himself. Because this is ridiculous. You're not sure that he won. You're bringing into question all these Americans who voted legally, came out and stood and voted. How dare you question it?
When did they ever suck it up? When did they ever accept that the election was legitimate? Well, obviously, we had Meghan McCain over there, who's a little bit of a dissenting point of view, who can ask some pretty sharp questions of guests. But that whole crew of people loved Barack Obama, and they're going to love on Joe Biden. And so now there's this call where it is time for the Republicans to suck it up and unify the country. But they're really bad at that because there's really sort of a divide among liberals, because while they talk about unity, they're really thinking about impunity. They're really thinking about how President Trump and his administration have gotten away with so much horrific injustice that there must be punishment. People need to go to jail. People need to be denied careers. And they did discuss this on The View also. Sarah Haynes, in this case, was sort of the dissenter who said it sounded a little like blacklisting the communists in the 50s. And this is where Sonny Hostin came in and said, that's not true, that punishing the Trump administration people isn't like McCarthyism at all. Which is true in that McCarthy was actually talking about Soviet agents of espionage. These people keep trying to say that somehow Donald Trump or Carter Page or somebody was a Russian asset. Nobody ever accused them of red baiting or Russophobia or whatever allegation you'd like. But there's been this whole line about how we need national unity. Michelle Obama got a lot of grief or a lot of attention on Twitter because she sort of represents the way the liberals really feel about this. Get a load of this. She says, "Let's remember that tens of millions of people voted for the status quo, even when it meant supporting lies, hate, chaos, and division." Oh, is that what we voted for? Then she continues. She puts on her new age hat, her guru brooch. "We've got a lot of work to do to reach out to these folks in the years ahead and connect with them on what unites us." Which, of course, reminds me of a book that Dan Rather did a couple years ago called What Unites Us. It's just preposterous when liberals arrive on the scene and say, "It's time for us to unite." What does that mean? David Harsanyi has an article in the National Review, which I'm just going to read a paragraph because it just says it better than I could. What quote-unquote unity really means, of course, is capitulation. America is once again being subjected to the inane brand of pseudo-patriotic sloganeering we saw during the Obama years. Now, as then, the media will pretend that the moral fabric of the nation must be mended after Republican rule. It's pretty transparent. When Democrats win the presidency, we are treated to solemn calls for national restoration and political harmony, and to the expectation that, for the good of the nation, the opposition will embrace decorum and pass legislation they oppose. When Republicans win elections, grown women put on knitted hats depicting their reproductive organs and stomp around Washington protesting, all to a hero's welcome. That's perfect. Unity, what does that mean? It is one thing to say that when all the votes are counted and when all the challenges have been adjudicated, we can acknowledge we have a president-elect. That's different than saying, let's all unite behind the Democratic agenda. Like that won in this election. I mean, again, I think if you look at the votes for Congress, that's not exactly what happened. So Joe Biden gave this quote-unquote victory speech on Saturday night, talking about the soul of the country. And about a minute after he finished speaking, CNN went on Twitter, CNN Communications, CNN PR, and posted a video of an advertisement that they're now running on their network in between the Trump-hating segments. This is how it goes.
Our trust has been broken. in our leaders, in our institutions, even with some of our friends. And we are hurting. Now more than ever, we need each other to listen, to learn from one another, to rebuild those bonds. Because trust shows that we believe in the good in each other. It's what makes us human. And when we trust one another, that is when we can truly achieve great things.
Yes, when we trust one another, we can do great things. Translation, we can pass liberal stuff. I mean, who thinks CNN can be sincere about this at all? Who thinks CNN has been all about building up our institutions in the last 4 years? They've basically been trashing the president all this time, trashing anybody who actually has anything to do with this administration, and using leakers who are anonymous, who we can guess are either very embittered Bush people or more likely Obama people who may still be inside the government at some of these agencies, leaking damaging material where they can pretend to be senior administration officials even when they're not. We found that out in the case of Miles Taylor. He was not a senior administration official when he wrote this silly op-ed by Anonymous in the New York Times. I mean, how can these people lecture us about transparency and misinformation when they publish anonymous crap where you couldn't possibly understand who said it or whether what they say is accurate because you don't know where they actually worked? So you have CNN basically doing an ad suggesting it's time for us to come together and unite behind you-know-who. And yet, they're still throwing bombs on air. I mean, Anderson Cooper is shown in this advertisement in black and white. You know, Chris Cuomo, Don Lemon, all the sober uniters we've come to expect. So Anderson Cooper comes on the other night and he's telling this whole story about, yeah, I was in Kinshasa in 1996 and Mobutu Sese Seko, the Zairean dictator, was being swept out. He was going into exile. And Mobutu's son was apparently driving around in a pickup with a gun, picking off dissenters. And then he sort of says, well, thankfully it hasn't come to that here. Then why the hell are you using it as an example? This is why CNN is a joke to so many people. Trump is Hitler. Trump is Stalin. Trump is Mao. Trump is Mobutu. Donald Trump Jr. we can compare to a mass murderer committing mass shootings out of a pickup. Well, thankfully, that hasn't happened here, but we're still going to sort of pretend that that's who they are. Mobutu was a pretty awful dictator, and Trump reminds me of him. And then he says, I can't believe we're in a situation like this. These people are so impatient for Trump to concede. And they sat around for 5 weeks and let Al Gore contest Florida. They were fine with that. Al Gore wasn't some African dictator who shot people for trying to challenge the vote counting in Florida. Why can't these people, if they really believe in democracy, let the vote counting be challenged? One would think that journalistic institutions would say, well, let's make sure all our voting was ship shape. Why can't they allow that to continue? Why is that being categorized as chaos? It seems to me like that's just how we make sure that our elections are above board. Florida went into, after the sort of 2000 debacle, Florida went in and said, we've got to really make sure the system is ship shape. And I think they're pretty proud of it now. So I think that that's what the president should be allowed to challenge this. Obviously, some of these states, you have Republican Secretary of States. I don't think they have any conspiracy. Republicans don't have some conspiracy to throw the election to Biden. But CNN just can't take a second to allow the idea or the possibility that the president can refuse to concede that the election's over. Like he must genuflect. It's like they have spent this entire presidency being upset that Trump isn't doing their will. So CNN, who will make ads saying, we need to come together for unity, has Anderson Cooper going on air and suggesting that the president's an obese turtle on his back flailing in the hot sun. Oh, he apologized for that right before they put this cuckoo ad on the air. And then he went back to he's Mobutu. On New Day, the anchor John Berman was saying that the Republicans are enabling Trump again. They're treating him like a petulant child. Then the next day he comes on and he says, you know, Biden called for unity. The response from the outgoing president? No. The response from the administration? Hell no. The response from Republican leaders in Congress? F no. Again, hey, Earth to CNN. You're not uniters. You shouldn't even pretend to be uniters. You certainly don't have any credibility suggesting to other people that they're bad at uniting. You shouldn't have any pride in the idea that somehow other people are petty and you are not. It just shows you your utter lack of self-awareness. So we're having a problem in these days right after the election with people accepting the election returns, and then on the other hand, people refusing to accept that some people have a right to challenge the election returns. So one front on the election, the pre-election, the post-election, is the role of the social media, the big tech giants. Here joining us on the Newsbusters podcast this week is Alexander Hall, who handles these issues in part on Newsbusters and in part on something called TechShark. Tell us what TechShark is.
Well, thanks for asking. My show, TechShark, is bite-sized news stories for conservatives surfing the net, all about big tech, censorship, whistleblowers, new platforms. We've got it all.
Yeah, and your latest, you had an interview with
Alan Bakari, who wrote this new book describing more or less what's happened in the past couple of years, how the entire landscape of the internet has changed dramatically. And long story short, liberals are mad that conservatives have gotten extremely good at social media in the past few years, and they're doing everything they can to put their thumb on the scale to try to censor conservatives, to stop their stories from going viral. They are afraid of what we're saying now, and they are absolutely terrified, and they're willing to do whatever they can to stop us.
Yeah, it seems odd to me. You know, my overarching vision for this was always, back when Facebook and Twitter could be used as, oh, look at how Obama's getting his message out. Look at how Obama used Facebook to get reelected. Look at this tweet of Barack and Michelle hugging was the most popular tweet in Twitter history. And then Trump gets elected and suddenly Facebook and Twitter are threats to democracy itself, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in truth, I would say in about fall of 2014, when a lot of culture wars were happening across lots of nerd culture and video games culture, many people from the left switched sides to the conservative side of things and brought a lot of their online hacktivist tactics with them. And so as a result, that's really cross-pollinated with the conservative movement. And now we've been able to undermine the media establishment, the political establishment, by getting all of these stories to go viral when mainstream media won't talk about, say, the New York Post story about the Hunter Biden laptop. We make it go viral, we bring it out there, and we force them to talk about it.
Yeah, this is what always happens in terms of, especially in terms of scandals. And that is, let's imagine now we're actually having a Thanksgiving dinner because, of course, these Democratic politicians are saying nobody should have one. You go to the Thanksgiving dinner, you start talking about Hunter Biden's laptop, and all of your Democratic relatives think you're from Mars because they don't know what you're talking about, because the liberal media doesn't want to talk about it. So if they stay silent on this stuff, then you sound cuckoo because you actually know what's going on. I mean, this is, to me, sort of what happens. I wanted to talk specifically about a recent article by Kevin Roos, who is a tech columnist for the New York Times. And he wrote this story that was mocked roundly on conservative social media. And this, in particular, Oliver Darcy of CNN was saying that Roos was smart to say it is possible for a story to be factually accurate and for it to be part of a misinformation campaign aimed at undermining confidence in an election. Accurate but fake. We used to have fake but accurate. Now it seems we have accurate but fake.
Oh, that's totally true. And I think this is part of that same phenomena of now people in tech realizing, wait a second, conservatives are getting really good at social media, and that undermines our monopoly on information. And that's part of why big tech companies acting as the arbiter of truth, quote, quote, is so dangerous. When even, like, for those few feminists who are brave enough to still say that men and women are different, I mean, those now get censored by Twitter. So Twitter clearly is not a proper arbiter of social media. But the fact is, these tech columnists like Kevin Roos, they want social media to crack down mm-hmm. on the conservative movement because they know how popular conservative truth becomes as soon as that goes viral, because the truth always eventually wins. And so the fact is, they try to smother it by using any techniques they can and try to pressure companies to do more of that. I would say that Roos was quite effectively scorched by the Babylon Bee CEO Seth Dillon for pretty brazen hypocrisy. He said, quote, "Roos tweets about right-wing misinformation and pro-Trump misinformation, but never mentions left-wing misinformation. He's never even said the word left-wing on Twitter." If someone's highlighting only one side's misinformation, then they're misinforming you too, end quote. I think that is perfect.
Yeah.
That frames it so well. Because the left can be so brazenly wrong about certain things, and the fact is they're never quite seen as misinformation. When they gaslight, that's not seen as misinformation. But the fact is they can call us out all day. I mean, Kevin Roos even had this hilarious podcast that was called The Rabbit Hole, Rabbit Hole. And I went over that earlier this year. And he was talking about how social media is so dangerous because it radicalizes people. And he brings in some guy, Caleb Kane, who, quote, quote, fell down the alt-right rabbit hole and became a viewer of videos like, you know, Steven Crowder. How dangerous.
Oh,
how
my
dangerous
goodness.
And terrifying, right? The radical. I know. So, but of course, he was, you know, redeemed more or less in left-wing people's opinion because he then got indoctrinated by left-wing videos. And that's the thing. It's just that, like, you know, you're radical if you believe the conservative or centrist talking points that everybody thought was universal 10, 15 years ago. And you're a radical up until you get indoctrinated. You believe the same nonsense that a lot of the liberals believe now. And so the fact is, liberals are outraged by the fact that there is any ability of conservatives to get past that, to work around that.
Well, and you're underlining something that obviously bothers a lot of conservatives, and that is that this sort of notion of a rabbit hole is they want to say, well, if you like Steven Crowder, you're probably going to like the neo-Nazis. I mean, it's just this whole idea of the idea that if you like conservative podcasts or YouTubes, that you're being led down a primrose path that naturally ends in alt-right, white supremacy, Alex Jones type material. And it just makes you think, these people, can't honestly spend any time listening to this stuff and acknowledging that some of it is factual. Why can't these people have the open-mindedness, the liberals, the progressives, have the open-mindedness to accept there are contrary facts?
I would say the perfect example of this exact phenomenon has been controversies about this whole mail-in ballots, right? One major study that I did, I recently wrote it. It was about how big tech essentially has been censoring conservatives for criticizing mail-in voting, saying it is susceptible to fraud. Meanwhile, liberal media in the past made a bunch of those exact same criticisms in past elections.
Yeah.
And so the fact is, if you say those same critiques now, you get censored, you get a warning label put on your tweet that you're misinformation, you get gaslit by people saying, well, that's not real. Despite the fact that there's literal articles from the New York Post, the New York Times, Washington Post, MSNBC, Slate, who make a bunch of those exact same criticisms. And that's really the core of the hypocrisy, is that now we are finding out information that is tactically useful, that is the truth, but it's not what the left wants everybody to know, because that would hurt their side. So then they try to squelch it with whatever power that they can. And that's what's so dangerous, I think.
Yeah, what's funny to me is the elasticity of the way they defined information and misinformation, as you just suggest. I remember, Jerry Nadler's one of these people that said that mail-in voting couldn't be trusted. And they were very, very upset at Donald Trump suggesting repeatedly in his speeches, in his tweets, that this was going to be a rigged election because of the mail-in voting. Now, to me, I always get upset when the fact checkers break out, because they're basically saying you can't predict this election's going to be rigged. And this is the true double standard of fact checking. I mean, first of all, no fact checker who uses that term should say that a prediction is somehow a fact you can check, unless the prediction is so absurd where you suggest, I think that after the Democrats get elected, they're going to kill everyone. That's preposterous. But you don't need a fact check for that. But we've seen this over the years. I mean, you're way too young for this, Alex, but in 92, they all ran around saying, George Bush can't say Bill Clinton's going to raise taxes, and he got elected, and he passed the largest tax increase that in American history up to that point. So, I mean, we're still looking at the same thing, as they're not allowing the Republicans to make a prediction. Now, still on the topic of Kevin Roos, this is one of these guys whose big racket is to constantly suggest, oh, conservatives can't possibly be censored on social media when they're the top producers or the top products consumed on social media. Couldn't both be true?
Both can absolutely be true. It's also, there's different factions within the conservative movement. I mean, there sometimes will be a certain figure, such as, say, Chris Wallace, who might not be being censored, but he's definitely a different faction from people like Tucker Carlson, for example. So it's just like, there's all these different ideologies within the conservative movement, some of which the left likes more than certain parts of the right do. And so I would definitely say that there's something very tactical going on there. They pick parts of the conservative establishment that are seen more or less as safe by the left, that they don't see as tactically dangerous. And they say, well, these people are allowed to speak. Therefore, conservatives as a movement, as, this big thing, are not being censored. And that I find to be a completely bad faith angle that they're completely coming at right there.
And Kevin Roos, you mentioned Seth Dillon at the start here. We should bring this back around. I know we had this on Newsbusters, that Kevin Roos is one of these people that thinks the Babylon Bee is this terrible force that's using satire to basically spread misinformation. We are so humor-deprived, we can't allow satire on our internet because people might think it's real.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, part of it is just because I would say, okay, back in the early 2000s, I would say the left really did have a monopoly on satire and comedy. But I would say within the past 10 years, we've really seen a shift to where the left is no longer funny. just because so many of the comedians, with the rise of cancel culture and political correctness, the window of what you're allowed to joke about, what you're allowed to say, what you're allowed to observe, has grown so narrow and has gone so far to the left to where, like, you know, Eddie Murphy could talk about the differences between this group and that group, or men and women, and people laughed because there was hyperbole, but also there were some genuine observations there. But now that's completely off the table. You're not allowed to observe differences between groups and comment on them in comedy. So now, essentially, the left finds that now all that's left is either shock value, gross humor, promiscuity humor, and Cheeto Man Drumpf. That's all that really the left is allowed to joke about anymore. So as a result, they really, I think part of it is there has to be some level of envy to where they see now conservatives are the ones effectively satirizing the left.
Right.
And they're furious about it, mm-hmm. and they want them taken down because they realize, wait a second, they've stolen our thunder. To a certain level, I think that's what's going on down below.
Well, and it should be stated that Kevin Roos has a hostility to Christianity. This is what I find fascinating. Here's Kevin Roos, a man who's writing this righteous column about misinformation and gaslighting and fakery. This is a guy who wrote a book about how he spent a quote-unquote sinner semester at Liberty University posing fraudulently as an evangelical student at Liberty when he was nothing of the sort. Who is he to come at us and try to tell us that the Christian conservatives or any other kind of conservatives shouldn't be faking people out?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the Sacha Baron Cohen, the guy who played Borat, the exact same thing.
Yeah.
He essentially poses as, you know, whatever groups he dislikes and wants to scapegoat. And basically, I'm not quite sure what the phrase is. He culturally appropriates, or he paints his face, you know, in order to be like another group, I'm sure, you know, and pretends to be them, this offensive stereotype of them, and then tricks people around him. And then comes after conservatives for being the source of misinformation. It's like, you know, y'all have been the sources of misinformation. Y'all indoctrinate, y'all gaslight. And then you come after conservatives just being able to speak and make honest critiques and say, no, that's the source of danger and division. And it's completely absurd and hypocritical. And the fact that these people, you know, pretend that they are these morally upright people when they've spent years doing this is absolutely a joke to me.
Yeah, I Sacha Baron Cohen's a great example of somebody who thinks he's a satirist, who is absolutely swindling people, who is absolutely surely out to expose people and embarrass people. This what he did to Ron Paul, I think, in Bruno, what he tried to do to Rudy Giuliani in this latest unfunny thing he did, is he's out to basically destroy people. And this, to me, represents the way the left is that it's only funny when conservatives are being destroyed.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, I would also say that as a person who used to be an actor and a performer full time, there really has been a shift in his own commitment as an artist. Because I remember in some of his earlier work, he wasn't always doing stuff for a purely political reason. He would sometimes tell offensive humor in what looked purely to be offensive humor for its own sake. And you could say, well, okay, then he's just doing shock value for the sake of shock value. But now I feel like he's pivoted his whole career pretending, well, hey, this was all just to expose bigotry. And it's like, no. You're just trying to escape cancel culture. And you're trying to pretend that this whole thing has been a, you know, political project for these, you know, morally good purposes. I mean, I really do think the man in some capacity is a complete coward. And I think maybe he worried about being canceled to some extent, and now he's just trying to retcon everything.
Well, I regret the minutes and the hours that I've wasted watching this man's movies, because we need to critique them. But I mean, I guess that happens to us a lot here. We watch a lot of television, read a lot of articles that probably they don't enlighten us, but we need to watch them or listen to them or read them so that we know what we can bring to you about what's wrong with the media today. So come back to see us at Newsbusters once a day, twice a day, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.